sometime around there, our final scores.
Yeah.
We broke those down and looked at our strongest and weakest objectives and started really rethinking what we were even doing this year and focusing on that to try to continue to make growth on our report card. And I know they have really focused a lot on the standards, even more so, and realigned some things. So I'm going to go over with you what we are going to continue to do. Each year, the teachers have a pacing calendar, and they take the standards, and they look at the standards, and the Oklahoma Academic Standards, and they look at, and they list essential skills, meaning what is the most important thing that these students in, say, fourth grade need to know, you know, before they leave. They align those with their pacing calendars to make sure that they teach those first, and then, of course, the others. And then that's done. Now, that's done in pre-K all the way through fifth grade. After they've done that, the third and fifth grade teachers compare those essential skills to the blueprint. The blueprint is basically a blueprint that the state puts out that says comprehension, literal understanding, this is how much, how the percentage that will be on the test, so that they can really focus on where they need to spend most of their time to prepare the students for the test. We got a new math program this year. Teachers went back through, looked at the standards in there, and then had to realign their pacing calendar again. So this pacing calendar, oftentimes, it's gone through a couple of times throughout the school year, making sure that things are aligned the way they should be to make sure they get to them. So they're constantly looking at those and tweaking those. Again, we will continue to do that. One of the things that we've talked about that we have in the past but still feel that we need to grow in this area is some more professional development on depth of knowledge. We've really worked on amping our questioning up to a level 3, but 3 and 4, just getting deeper into questioning to get critical thinking. So we feel like we still need some professional development on that so that we can ask the questions that we need to ask at a higher level. So that's something that we plan to do. We have flex groups, and the way we determine that is a flex group is a group of students. It's been those students at the that are the lower performers that have not mastered the standard, say, that we've been teaching for the last week or two. We've been really working with those students. But one of the things that we started talking about is we need to look at those kids that are on the bubble, meaning they're almost there. They're almost passing, but not quite. And so we're going to try even possibly flexing every student in the elementary at the same time. What this looks like, the flex time is built into our schedule. So they have 30 minutes, and based on the formative assessments that are given, they meet, they look at that data, they divide those kids. Well, right now, I may have 6 or 7 kids at my table working on a skill. The rest of my students are out here doing independent centers, comprehension strategies, or multiplication, different things that they need, but I have a smaller group back with me. And what we're going to look at is, it's a big step, but we believe that we can do it. We're definitely going to flex those bubble students, but we're going to try to flex everyone, so that every student in the elementary, wherever they're at, our high students, our average students, are getting what they need. And we feel like we'll see some growth in that area. This summer, really right before school starts, we're going to have some professional development. All the teachers are going to be here on August 8th. And we're going to look at our professional learning communities, how we're doing this. I have some people that are communicating with me because I felt like I was at a point where I need someone from the outside to say, look at what we're doing. Give me some advice. What can we do? Because we're doing a lot, but what can we do to increase student growth? So that's another thing that we're planning on doing. Also, rigor. Developing rigor doesn't mean harder. It just means that we're looking at, again, that critical thinking, problem-solving skills, making sure that every teacher understands how to put rigor in their instruction, in their lessons, that will help our students. Teachers will collaborate and discuss what their instruction looks like at data team meetings and determine if there's enough rigor in activities students participate in. Once we have a group of students for 2.5 weeks, teachers meet during their planning time, and we look at the data based on their assessments. Then they go around and say, how did you teach this? Your kids passed this. What did you do that I'm not doing? That's a very important key component. And sometimes, due to time, that has been left off, that discussion. And so that's a very important part that we need to make sure is done during that data team meeting. And so we're looking at ways to increase that time for them to meet, to be able to really have a true reflection and discussion on what each other did, because that's how we're going to learn too and grow and make sure that we're all pushing our students and getting them where they need to be. We have a lot of different software. We're beginning to look at maybe possibly just instead of having two or three to choose from, let's look at a program. Let's all speak the same language. Let's look at the data together and really focus on that, because pre-K through 4th, they have iPads. It's not one-to-one, and they go to the computer lab K through 4 twice a week. But if you're going to the computer lab twice a week and you're not using the same program, there's some inconsistencies. There's not anything that you're really using to help support your instruction. So we think that maybe if we look at some different programs, it's probably going to look different 3rd through 5th than the lower elementary, and be very intentional about pulling that data, talking about where our kids at. I think that's going to help a lot. Chronic absenteeism. When students are absent, make sure that we call them if they've not notified the school. Just continue to communicate how important attendance is at Dewey Elementary. We had 110 on the chronic absenteeism report. And at some point, sometimes we have to involve Officer Gray. But that piece there is just really even scheduling a certain time each week, each day. This is when we're doing this, and calling parents. And again, just really trying to explain how important it is for their kids to be here. Do you all have any questions?
I do. First, I'm going to start. Don't take this as any blame, okay? I asked just to provoke the thought.
Sure.
So I've got a bunch, and unfortunately you happen to be the first one, so a lot of it's going to go hand in hand. One of the things, I look at our professional development, and I see that you're trying to address that. Do we need to address it more in the respect that should we use some of those snow days? I know that people want off, but right now, this is something big.
Mm-hmm.
This is a focus. Should we force the hand and get that extra development through those days that we have provided? Sometimes it won't be available because of having to make up, things like that. And I'm just going to kind of go down through there and just let you go and answer some of these. The other thing I look at is, I know that Mr. Vince and I talk. Socioeconomic makes a huge difference. Have we looked at those communities that are in the same realm as we are that are successful? And what are they doing? Because one of the things, I'm in an industry where research and development is huge. And I'm not going to tell you we steal technology because we don't steal technology, but we darn sure go out and find out what the people are doing.
Right.
And we get that information from them. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing that I kind of look at that we can do. Did you say also that we got these scorecards in October?
They're reports, not the report card. They're scores. And they were late. So we usually, hopefully, it's ideal to get those, you know, June, May, to be able to plan. So we did get them in October. School had already started, but yes.
And so the new things that you come up with, Jerry, when did you get start implementing those actually?
Probably November.
November.
As soon as I got the scores, Ms. Friday and I, Mr. Matheson, we broke those scores down. We looked at them. I have a grade level meeting once a month and a staff meeting once a month. So those are the times that I shared that information. And I will tell you that each third, fourth, and fifth looked at those. That they are fantastic about, okay, what do we need to do? And so every single month, more than once, because we also have our data team meeting, we're having those conversations on where we're at, where we need to go. We also have those informally through me sending chats. I've looked at this. This is where we're at. Sometimes I'll, you know, have to say, I need to meet with you all. This is what I'm seeing. They're also really great. There's a program that we use through Edmonton that they stay after school. My staff is very willing to say, sure. So I, third through fifth, stayed after school. We had a webinar with Rachel Robbins to talk about where we were on our data with using Study Island. And this is what you can do to get those kids to where they need to be. So it's just a constant conversation. One of the things that I'd like to say, and it is, it's not an excuse.
No.
That it's really hard to see in the score is for a for that growth to show. If I'm on basic and I'm going to proficient, or it's below basic, we had kids that increased their score, say, in basic, but didn't hop to proficient. We had kids that scored proficient last year, and they scored proficient this year, but their score last year in the proficient range was higher, so it didn't show growth. The same thing happened in advanced. The kids scored advanced, but maybe they were, I don't even know the number, but maybe they were 400, and this year they were 390. We didn't show growth. However, they were still advanced. So
what do you account? And this is, again, there's no blame.
Yeah.
What do you consider the difference? Why did we go from 4 to 390? Is it the system that's changed, in your opinion?
Part of it.
Okay.
I mean, and every year, like this year, when you go from third grade to fourth grade, the cut scores are different.
Okay.
There's more questions on the fourth grade test than there are on the third grade test. So the test that the third graders took in third grade compared to how they're doing in fourth grade, there's more tests, you know, there's more questions. The cut scores are different. So there is a little bit of discrepancy. We want to be strong enough to show, you know, that growth. But you have a kid that we've, you know, had in a flex group who came to us and wasn't reading, and, you know, in the classroom you're seeing success and that they are now reading, but not enough to show that growth.
Yeah.
And so those are things that perhaps, you know, for sure that you don't see, that they see every day in the classroom and that we are constantly monitoring. But we do know that, I mean, this is a work in progress every year. I mean, we tweak, we say, what are we doing? What are we not doing? We're doing a lot. So then we have to, you know, take a step back and say, okay, we're doing a lot, but what can we do differently? And that is a constant conversation that we have, and just looking at those individual kids and just trying to get them to that next level.
Yeah, and I'll tell you one thing. I've always been impressed with what you've done at the elementary. I want you to know that. I hate as a community member to see, and I know this is a work in progress, and one of the things is I think that it is very, it's terrible the way they do it, because they give you the score after the fact, and then you've got a whole year and mm-hmm. making up. You don't know what you're making up until you get your score and you get to realize
You're right. And, you know, this year, it's going to look completely, they're going to compare these scores to last year's, and my fourth and fifth are taking the test online for the very first time.
The one, you've seen all my kids, you've had all mm-hmm. my kids. I know that we look at the bubble kid, and I want that to happen. Mm-hmm. That has to happen. But also, don't forget that kid that's above the bubble. Push those kids, because
yes.
I know that we try to get these scores, but at the end of the day, I want to know that all kids are pushed across right. the board. And
absolutely. And I will say, I think I speak for, you know, we're fortunate we have a great gifted and talented program. That they're getting that. But that's why I said our goal next year is every student be flexed. Because of that, yeah. You don't want to leave those kids out. And they also need that challenge, those higher-level activities as well. And that's where we feel like we need to step a little bit further, closer to that. It's a huge undertaking when you have 105 kids in your grade level.
Absolutely.
Because what becomes a small group is now I basically have 25 kids possibly in my class going over a skill that we really think that might be a good step in the right direction.
Only I'd say, just again, this, the collaboration, and I want you to know that I thank you for what you do.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Dave,
yeah, first, thanks for going first. You're probably making it easier on the other.
You're welcome.
Take all those, lunch. Going back to one of the first things you talked about, the PACE calendar.
Mm-hmm.
So who, and I'm sorry if I'm making you repeat yourself, who develops that PACE calendar or sets mm-hmm. sets those?
The standards, we have our Oklahoma academic uh-huh. standards, and then the classroom teachers look at those standards. And then they basically say, okay, what are the most important? Because there are some standards that if you had to choose, we want them to learn them, but they're not the essentials.
Mm-hmm.
So the classroom teachers sit down together and determine that. And then...
And that's grade level.
It's each grade level.
So is there, within those groups, those grade level groups, is there accountability between the teachers to kind of see that... They're staying on track with that calendar?
Yes.
So
they have graphs that they fill out when that standard is taught,
mm-hmm.
and they highlight when the students have mastered that.
Mm-hmm.
So you go along throughout the year, and all of a sudden you have a graph of who has mastered, who hasn't. You go back, reteach.
Mm-hmm.
New flex group, and it's just a continual cycle, as well as Mr. Matheson and I attend the data team meetings
mm-hmm.
so that we also know what's going on as well and give input.
The formative assessments too as well, so at the end of teaching a standard, all the teachers give the same test to check where the students are, and so that the mm-hmm. formative assessments are built into that as well, that after so many weeks, then you give this formative, and that's all kind of given at the same time, and then everyone gets together and says, how do these kids score? And then that goes in, also that data goes into how the kids are put into then those flex groups to say, oh, these kids are struggling here, so we'll put them in these flex groups.
Okay.
So that's built in there as well, the formatives, how they assess
the
students.
So y'all, a lot of that is in that data team discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chancellor. Oh,
yes.
Your October results,
mm-hmm.
they come back. When are those tests taken? When do you turn those tests?
April. We're taking those.
January?
No, not from
April. From April to 6 months to get the results? Yes. The ball's being dropped.
Well,
it's not us.
The goal this year is for us to have them by July. Yeah. We had preliminary scores in July this past year, but they were not final, so you can only glean so much off of those and plan so much off of those.
That's a half a year away. I mean,
yeah,
you can't plan anything if you don't know where you're playing.
So, yeah, at this time, we started testing today for this year. So we start testing in April. And then, yeah, in this particular last year,
the state's lagged, giving you the results for 6 months.
Yeah.
Half a year behind.
Mm-hmm. With them changing the way the tests were structured or formatted, mm-hmm. they have to go through a process there of, are they testing what they're supposed to be testing? Are they truly measuring the standards? And so they have a lot of work to do on their end to just make sure that they've done their job correctly before they'll ever release anything. That's why it took so long.
We're talking about education kids, analyzing tests or... Computers can do all that. This doesn't make any sense to me. You know, 6 months? No.
Yeah, they're graded by the computer. Right about that. Yeah.
You know what? I mean, the technology, what you can do with a computer in numbers, how can a school district plan anything when you're 6 months waiting on them?
Well, and that's where I think that the teachers do a good job of, like Ms. Moore had said, of planning together in each of those groups after getting that. That's why the adjustment came in November on some of those things, because you're 3 months into school and then having to adjust some of
it. You should have had it planned before the first day of school.
Exactly.
You should have had it before then. The legislatures or whatever, who controlled it?
And with getting the scores, even the preliminaries in July, we didn't really know how they were going to be calculated to the report card. That was the thing for us, is we knew what the scores were, but how are they now going to take those and turn those into these grades? Mm-hmm. There were some mathematical calculations that were way above our pay grade on mathematics to be able to determine that. Okay. So I knew we could be, just to speak for the middle school, I thought we were going to be somewhere between a D and a B. You know, so we could fall somewhere in that range based on how they tabulated our test scores. And we were a C. So, I mean, we were right in the middle. But we just didn't know. But now we do. So now we kind of know how it's being scored, how the game's being played, to use that phrasing. I hate to use that phrasing, but that's...
Well, you have to know where you're at.
Right, exactly. I mean, how are you being measured?
You can't guess.
Right.
You know, in my corporate world, when I went to work, I knew what I was supposed to do.
Right.
I knew what... And if they wanted to change in 5 minutes, we change in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
You can't wait 6 months. I mean,
it helps to know how you're being scored. Yes, that's true.
And I will tell you, it's a new test, and I do believe the more we take it, the more we understand what needs to be done, because the teachers have we went to Common Core, they redid their pacing calendar, looked at standards, then we went to the OAS standards, redid it again, and I think. This is our second year, and as we continue to, if it stays the same, I think that will help as well, as having the same test to compare to. Like I said, fourth and fifth are taking it on the first time on a computer this year. So that's going to be a big difference in comparing these third grade to fourth, when third was paper and now we're putting on a computer. But I think the more that we take this, if it will stay the same, that hopefully we'll get some...
If we can get variables to start being consistent in anything, and that's key right now, because we've been in such transition, it seems like, in state of Oklahoma and education, in terms of trying to determine how do we determine how good schools are, how do we quantify it. Mm-hmm. We've been in such transition on that several things have changed, yes, from standards to tests to how a grade card is going to be constructed. We've been through so much change. It will be nice at some point to get all these variables to stay consistent for several years at a time. That will help in trying to your point, Dave, trying to meet a mark that has been established. But we got to get to the point where that mark stays consistent for several years in order to start moving that direction. Because, to your point, you were right. There's a lot of things you said that were dead on. You get scores, you take tests, you get scores later. We just got the report card in late February. I mean, for this year, it really becomes, it's a bit of a mess for us actually planning for this current year we're in. But the things you're hearing here are going to be things that are changed next year, we're talking two grade cards away, because next year's grade card is already happening, started today, because we're testing today and the rest of this month. So, yeah, well, there really is a true lag. But we'll hope, to Mr. Massey's point, we'll hope that this process starts getting a lot more streamlined and we start getting information back in a lot more concise time period that helps us, yes, start meeting some of these goals.
So for hindsight, do you, like Vince said, you're behind, not by a fault. Do you feel that now you see some sort of a direction that you made the right move in the right direction so that you may have progression on the next one?
I hope so. I have really seen a difference in third, fourth, and fifth in utilizing some of our software that really aligns with the standards and using them as an instructional tool in the classroom. A lot more focus on that this year, and we're hoping to see a difference with that. I think we're headed in the right direction.
So a question for you real quick. Mm-hmm. I know this is a new system, new cards, everything. So how does this align nationally? Is this something that is we're out in left field and everybody else out in right field playing? Or
yeah,
is
good
this
question.
Pretty, yeah, that's a good question.
That was the reason why this is in place today, is that the tests were supposed to align with national standards. There's a test called the NAEP test, and it's been taken now for 7 years at just certain grade levels. So the idea was that Oklahoma, through people who analyzed all this data, that Oklahoma was behind on what their measurements were, the tests that were given. They weren't really necessarily meeting national standards. So when you compared Oklahoma's built tests to national tests, it wasn't quite measuring up. We saw this huge gap. Well, what they chose to do was we're going to try to close that gap by aligning the national standards on something like the NAEP and the Oklahoma test that we have now constructed and built. And so now that's why you hear the terms depth of knowledge, where we're no longer talking about surface knowledge of a subject, or it's more about less items, go deeper, more critical thinking skills. So really, the construct of the test has changed as well, because now our kids are being asked to process and do a lot of those kinds of things than just simply extracting an answer and bubbling it in. There's a lot more now process to those questions. And this is really year two. We just finished year two of that process. So I think the idea was there to close that gap between the measurement that were being taken at the national level and the state level.
You know, and this is a comment today, it's not going to change. But to me, the simplistic, smart thing to do is they have a national standard test and everybody has the same system. Because no matter what, if I have a little bit different, you can never, ever truly get a accurate depiction.
If you're trying to compare kids in Oklahoma to kids in Maine, you're right. Yeah, I guess that's the intent of the NAEP test. But I don't even take the NAEP only at what?
Every 5 years, I want to say.
And it's a certain grade level.
What is selected? You know, kind of randomly.
Fifth grade, eighth grade,
certain schools
grade,
in Oklahoma.
Fourth grade.
Yeah. Fourth grade, eighth grade,
yeah.
So.
And I know that we don't. You know, we have a different view.
Yeah, somebody.
You're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
But in the same respect, we are going after the same job fields.
You're right. It's a global economy. It's a global marketplace. There's no doubt about that.
Thank you again, Jerry.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right. Hi, guys. Thanks for allowing me to be
Get
here to speak.
One now.
I appreciate it. Yeah. Thanks, Jerry. Some of the things you hear will be similar to what Jerry said, because the things that we're trying to do are not just building-wide. I mean, they're district-wide things, and they're best practices. So it's not just something that, well, the elementary is doing one thing, the middle school and high school are doing something completely different. Best practices are best practices no matter what grade level you're in as far as operating educationally. So you'll hear some similar things. One thing, just before I start, to speak to what you said, Mr. Higby, about the kids that are above the bubble. This new system, I'm not going to say just a bunch of glowing things about it, but one thing it does do well is you have to focus on growing every kid, whereas the old system was just, can you get every kid to this line
Absolutely.
And get them over that line? And so that was really the focus of the old, was can we just get them this line? And at that point...
I'd say that's where I saw some in Seth, and you hear from Aerith, him and some of them.
Right.
And nothing against the school, because I understood what they had to do, but, and he's not the norm.
Yeah, the discussions that you have in meetings then in that system were not about those kids. They were about the other kids. Yeah. Now every kid has to be discussed, which I do think that's one positive outgrowth of the system. So that is a good thing. So when we got our preliminary results in the summer, myself, Coach Rubel, Miss Wood, we met and we kind of put some things down on paper that we wanted to try to do for this year. We knew there were things that needed to be addressed in certain areas and really in all areas with every kid. So these are things we came up with. So I'll kind of talk about each one, and if there's things as far as educational jargon or lingo that you never heard before, I'll try to explain those things, or you feel free to ask questions. But I'll also give you a quick update kind of on the status of where we're at on each of these things for this year from what we have tried to do. Some things we felt like have been successful and we've had good luck with. Other things have been more of a struggle, and that's with any new initiative you try to do and changes you try to make. So if you have any questions, happy to answer. Just stop me at any point. So benchmark tests that we give on a regular 4 to 5 week cycle, we wanted those benchmark tests. We wanted to look at those and see, are they created in a way that matches the OSTP test, so the new testing system? If we're giving kids a test every 4 weeks to check their progress, they should be taking a test that's like what they'll see on the state test. And we had some things there that were not up to that level, like what Mr. Vince was talking about. They're trying to make it more nationally relevant. It's more difficult. It's more rigorous. So we need what we're going to give them on a regular basis to be more rigorous and to be more challenging for them. Now, we don't want to over-test kids, and that's where you can get kind of in limbo a little bit, is are we testing them too much, where now comes the state test time, and they're like, oh, God, I got to take another test. I'm tired of this. You know, you always have to find that balance of, do we assess them enough? Are we assessing them too much? Kind of find a happy medium. So trying to do that as well, but we did have to make some adjustments to our benchmark testing because they were not up to where they needed to be. So we feel better about those for this year. Higher depth of knowledge levels, that's what DOK stands for, depth of knowledge. So like what Mr. Benson alluded to, instead of saying the War of 1812 was between these two countries, and you just either know that or don't know that, it may have a question that says, like, tell me about the cause of the War of 1812 and then one factor that led to it ending, something like that. So it's a little deeper. You know, you got to know a little bit more about the subject matter. And DOK 3 and 4 level, a lot of times you have to actually produce something. You may have to give a short answer. It's not just a multiple choice bubble in. You know, you may happen to guess it correct. You have to actually know something about it and be able to show that and prove that. So we wanted it to be more like that. STAR reading and STAR math assessments are given regularly in all of our grade levels and English and math now, whereas previous years, that's been a little bit more spotty. And those are assessments that just show where a kid is right now in reading and math compared to everyone else in the nation and what grade level they're on. So we try to give those once a month. Right now we're giving those, and then we're tracking progress. And then when we see a need, and it'll identify for you under this kid's in need of intervention in this one particular area. So if a kid struggles with algebraic reasoning, for instance, it'll tell you on there, you can go and intervene with that student. You can pull them in for some one-on-one tutoring and some help, and then, you know, teachers can work with them on what they need, not just general math, but this one specific skill. So we do like that aspect of that program. And that's been more consistent this year than ever before, at least in my 4 years here. So every grade level, reading and math, is now doing that regularly. So we're happy about that. This is one I put stars by it because to us it was the most important thing. And Jerry alluded to it too. So you're going to hear the word bubble. The bubble kids, what we're talking about in our meetings this year with our grade level teams, are kids that make A's and B's in class, but then for some reason are not proficient on the state test. Whereas their needs educationally don't show up. They're not apparent to you in class. Like, they're compliant. We talk about that in our school a lot. Are we just grading the compliance of kids because they're able to do X, Y, and Z assignment or X, Y, Z activity on time? Is that what we're grading, or are we truly grading their learning of the subject matter? That's more of a mindset shift that we've really had to get to and talk about and really struggle with, because, I mean, a lot of teachers and principals and people that work in schools were good students. You know, they did well in class. They turned their work in on time. That was a place they had success, or otherwise they wouldn't go into that business because it was a struggle. So for us, we've really tried to identify kids that may be able to turn all their work in on time, may not cause problems in class, but still on assessments that we give, on the STAR reading and math assessments, on benchmark tests, something's not connecting there where they're able to really take their knowledge and take it to a deeper level. So that for us has been a focus this year, are those type of kids. And we had a pretty significant number of those kids based on our results from last year. Kids that, yeah, when we talk to teachers, we say, this student was in the basic category. They're like, what? A kid had an A in my class the whole year, you know, but something was missing for that kid. So finding what that is and trying to intervene on that has been a focus this year. Flex Fridays, each teacher has a group of kids that they work with based on that student's ability level. So that's something that we've tried to be more focused this year on, working with kids where they are and trying to move it forward, not just have them in a group just randomly, but really being intentional about that. And if you have students that, based on their assessments, are struggling with this one particular area, then bring those kids in. Let's get them working on and remediated in that area. We do meet every 2 weeks with our teachers on Wednesdays during their common planning time. That's something we did not have last year. We had some other things with electives and the way our master schedule set up where we had to take that away, and they couldn't meet as a grade-level team on a regular basis. Well, this year we have had that. And that's been a great thing that gives us a chance to have conversations to look at test data, benchmark tests, and STAR assessments and really see where kids are and give them some information as well about the actual what is going on with a student. Because there may be things that, you know, Johnny has a C or a D in class, whereas he's been an A student for his whole career. Well, his parents might have just got divorced. You know, his house might have burned down. You know, he may not have food to eat. A lot of times our teachers don't know that, so it gives us an opportunity to share the whole picture of a kid. So now that we know that, how can we intervene with that kid to try to help that kid be more successful in class? What can we do for him? Any questions so far?
Yeah, on that particular issue. So when we're, and I know Jerry said that, you know, we're taking these tests on computers now, right?
That's correct.
For the most part. And
we take all of ours
all
on computer.
All of them on computer. Yep. And so is it what kind of environment is it administered in? Is it timed? And the reason I ask this question is I was a very good tester, not a very good student, but I took tests well. My wife, on the other hand, was an AP student, straight A's, way smarter than I am, but she hears the word test and her blood pressure goes up.
Yeah.
And so...
Yeah, my wife's not
think that's
Victorian, yeah.
She's, yeah, and I think that's...
I can always make the better test scores.
And I don't know if there's a way to combat that pressure that some kids feel that are obviously
right.
Good students, but when they get in a test environment, mm-hmm. they just lock up.
Yeah, we try to have them take their benchmarks and their STAR assessments in the exact same environment they would take their state test in. So for us, with having Chromebooks, where each kid has one, they can take it in their classroom, a place that they've been every day for 160 days, so they're comfortable. We try to have them, you know, with their teacher mm-hmm. as much as we can, so there's a familiar face in there. And we try to make the conditions as such where they're comfortable. There's a little bit of pressure that can be passed down from the adults to the kids a little bit. We try to combat that. I try not to talk about test scores just on a massive amount basis, like on announcements or just, you know, the more pressure I put on teachers about it, it seems to filter down to the kids. They're going to feel that, you know. It's a balance because we care about it and we want it to be the best it could possibly be to represent our school and our community. But also, are the kids going to be successful if they're so worked out about it in their own minds? I mean, that's that always concerns us greatly. But we try to have them prepared where they've taken a test in that same environment multiple times before they do it. But on the computer, I mean, there's research about taking it on computer versus taking paper, and I don't know that there's really been a verdict on which one is better or worse, but our kids are more used to it now than they've ever been. Whereas at the elementary, like, this is the first mm-hmm. year for it, which it's a whole new thing, you know, mm-hmm. to operate that test and try to use the tools and the highlighters and things like that on a little pad like this, you know, instead of actually with your pencil, so... Mm-hmm. Does that answer your question?
Yeah,
and there are confines to that, obviously, because it's a standardized test, so therefore they try to create, they want you to create an environment that's as standardized as possible, too. So with the balance of trying to meet what their requirements are and providing the best, most conducive environment to their comfort is where we're trying to meet. And so and I think we try to do that at each level the best we can.
For sure. Go ahead.
So, this curious thing. Do you see the, you know, you're talking about, you get to see some of the students, you know, they're straight A, B, whatever it might be. Do you get to see the direct correlation? Do you get to see their direct score on that test? Or is it an average of a composite?
On the state test?
Yeah, I'm just curious. Can you say, hey, little Johnny, we see he's a straight A, and now we see him take this test, and he's hitting a C. Do you get to see that?
Or there's not necessarily a letter grade correlation, but the categories that are there, advanced, proficient, basic, and below basic.
So that test, you do know it's little Johnny's test? And
absolutely, yes. Okay. Yeah, we know each individual kid's score. We know their sub-scores, too, on certain categories within that one test. So, you know, we could have a kid that is proficient in every part of the English language except for vocabulary, for instance, like his struggle in that, the meaning of words. So we see that from the state. We know, well, we're going to need to really hit little Johnny on some vocabulary because that's where he needs support. Yeah. So we do at least get that from the state. And that's as far broken down as it is, but yeah.
Okay. So on the DOK, the depth of knowledge, you know, I know that we're getting to where we're trying to pass a test, and I hate that. I really do. But I look at depth of knowledge, and maybe it's a different way, maybe it's the same way everybody's, I don't know. But I think a lot of that is how the teacher presents it. Because if you're presenting just material, then it's nothing more than material.
Right.
But if you're presenting material in a way that is related to how you can utilize it in everyday or in the world, or you have examples that tie in with it. And I'm going to use one of your teachers, actually. I know that Coach Close is excellent at taking his history and I know not everybody can go out to the Civil War fields and everything else every year, but we do have that ability to take it in our spare time and apply it and to give real life, everyday type situations. And to me, it becomes more stimulating to the student.
Sure, absolutely. I think I can speak for Jerry and Brent that the teacher makes the single biggest difference in the classroom, the quality of the teacher. I mean, we can talk about everything else, programs, computer, everything else that we're doing, the quality of the teacher makes the biggest difference, and all research shows that, yes.
So with that said, have we identified those teachers that we feel are very good at doing those things and let them teach or other teachers how to teach? I mean, you can teach knowledge. I mean, that's, you can present it, but teaching is a different thing.
Right, right. The development of our teachers is a massive part of our planning. For our master teachers to mentor our younger teachers makes a huge difference in their success and their retention. I mean, their willingness to come back and teach another year, because the first year teaching as all these folks in a test is incredibly challenging. And you're really just trying to stay afloat in that. Having a master teacher to mentor you and show you what are some practices that work with kids, not what they taught you in college, like in a book by a professor, you know, what works on the street. That is really, really important. We try to do that as much as we possibly can, And time's limited. You know, those master teachers have responsibilities too, so we try to have it where it's not a burden for them, where they can spend time with them and they can come and observe them teach, and then they can talk about, this is why I did this particular thing, because a lot of teaching is kind of nuanced. You know, it's not like you go into a teacher's classroom and they may do something and you may not even know what they're doing. Like, they go over and they do something with a kid, you know, they're like, hey, how you doing? You know, like, and they just did an intervention with them right there. You don't even know what's happening. You know, just they're that good at their craft. They're masters. And so for a novice teacher, they almost have to have that explained to them. Like, this is what I did with this kid. And those are important conversations that, we want
to
have.
And I think you touched on something that, to me, is hugely important. We see it in the industry I'm in, is, just to be honest with you, I believe in education. I believe in higher education and all the above. But I also see a lot of the people come through the college system, and then they come out to work, and they're really not very good for about 2 to 3 years. Mm-hmm. It's the practical, everyday experience that they get shared that is what is relevant and makes them who they are.
Right, for sure. And teaching is...
That translates to education as well.
I think that's
no question.
I think it seems like you probably would.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I remember before I first started teaching, my mentor teacher, who was an Oklahoma State Teacher of the Year finalist, he said, I didn't feel very comfortable in the classroom until 7 years. Year seven was when I really started to feel like I was really, really good and could handle anything.
I don't think an engineer gets any good but at least 5 years.
Right. Yeah. 5 years is about when I can't speak for them, but 5 years is when I kind of felt like I'm rolling now, year five. If a kid does something, I can pretty much handle anything. There's always surprises because they're kids, but I at least feel comfortable that I can deal with whatever comes my way.
And this may be a practice you all already do. One of the practices that we have out there, and Dave, you can attest to this, we never stick a new professional or engineer with a new technician. Mm-hmm. It's always an experienced technician with an inexperienced and vice versa, because it's failure. If you do, you go new, it's failure 90% right. of the time.
I can see that, yeah.
On your Wednesday, every other week, meeting with your
yes.
teacher, from 0 to 100, how much buy into that program are you receiving?
As with anything, there are some people that you work with that take a little bit of nudging, a little bit of encouragement, a little bit of coaching up, if you want to say it that way. Our teachers have gotten used to the I'm not going to say you're picking at them with a fine-tooth comb, but used to the used to the we're going to discuss what you're doing in the classroom, and it's not meant as you're doing something wrong. It's just we're talking about your practices, and we're trying to make everybody the best that they can possibly be, and that requires us to know what you're doing, for one, and then try to make it better in whatever way that we can. It's kind of about what you put into it, so we encourage them to take it seriously, to come prepared, and to share, and to be part of the process, because if they're not, it's meaningless to them. So there are some that take more encouragement than others. I can just be honest with you about that there. But for the most part, our people are professional. They handle those things well, even when we've had to have difficult meetings, which we do on occasion, just like you guys do, I'm sure, at your places of business. So sometimes they're mad at me when they're over, but they get over it, you know.
And I don't mean to interject too much in your presentation, but one of the absolute most essential things is the instruction and the instructional strategies within the classroom. They make the biggest difference, there's no doubt. And I think we are at a point here in our district-wide, where we're having stronger conversations about instructional practices within the classroom, and not just geared towards doing better on a test. We're having deeper conversations now about practical strategies in the classroom that relate to a lot of what you were talking about, Ryan, that it's about producing something, whether it be a product in STEM, whether it be a presentation in any English class, whether it be working collaboratively with two or three other students to produce something. It's incorporating all those, not only subject level skills, but people skills that are required to produce something. That's where we're hoping to get to, is just, again, more practical application of knowledge that kids are receiving now, too. Hopefully some of that translates to a test, but even if it doesn't, we feel like that's what's preparing them the best for a long range. Yes.
Right.
So that's where our focus really tends to start getting. We never really want to get test-centric. But we do understand that there is important aspects to this, and that's why we try to take a fine-tooth comb to this report card and say, hey, what of this, though, can we extract data and information that can help us get better towards really what our goal and our mission is? And so
one of the things that pops into my mind real quick, Vince, and we'll move on pretty quick. I know that at Phillips, we have days now given to us for education purposes. Mm-hmm. And if someone, and I encourage all of our school system to utilize it, because that's out there and they get paid to come do it. Mm-hmm. And take and utilize the people that we have in our community that are doing those things that we're teaching and bring them in. And you know, I know a lot of times it's tough to get people in, but if we ask, I think a lot of times that communication, they will come and do it. And I know Stephanie, being in the banking industry, one of the things she said, if there was ever a situation that the school system said, hey, we need to know more about loans, mortgages, and stuff so we can show a practical application. So what she said that they would be willing to do it, and I'm sure that there's several other industries that would do
the
same.
I'm sure they are.
We just got to figure out who it is and go knock on their doors and say, hey, we need your help.
Well, we have seen that with our high school days where we've had some people come in on career days, and we've had a lot of support and a lot of people from the community come in and do that for our students.
Yeah.
But on the flip side, doing it for our teachers in the areas that we think we need some help in, that's not a bad idea or out of the question at all.
Yeah, anybody we ever call to do something, they always say yes. I mean, good. Most people are not going to turn a school down, generally speaking.
Good.
But we probably do need to do a better job of calling more. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just seeing those opportunities and taking them.
Yeah,
yes, there's no question.
People are comfortable.
What was the answer to the question?
Oh, on the meetings? Are we back to that question?
The buy-in number. Zero
to 100.
I'd say 80, probably. I'd say a solid B-, probably.
Depending on what scale you're using.
Yeah, exactly. if we have 20 teachers, I'd say 16 of them are completely bought in and are doing what they need to do to be a professional in those meetings. But there's four that we, myself and Coach Rubel and Ms. Wood, have to have conversations with sometimes in private about what they need to do differently in those meetings. I mean, that's.
So do you see a result when you have that conversation?
Yes, we do. The lastingness of that is.
Oh, it's constant.
It depends. Yeah, some they have to be reiterated sometimes.
We see how we're at.
I can imagine. Yeah, I can imagine. Just people, you know. Yeah, people
and workers are all alike no matter where they're at.
Exactly.
It's a numbers game.
Exactly, yeah.
And that's it. That's the bottom line.
Mm-hmm. Did that answer it? That
yes.
80?
Yeah.
All right.
80.
Like Ms. Moore alluded to, more rigor in the curriculum. We really wanted to take kind of a whole picture approach of curriculum, just what are we teaching? Is what we're doing in the classroom and practices we're using, is the material that we're going over with kids and working with kids on, is it aligned with standards? Is it deep enough? Are we just covering certain sort of things? And if so, then we need to work on getting deeper, and how do we do that? Mr. Russell?
That's
my presentation's over at that point.
Yeah.
He set that alarm.
That's good.
That's funny.
You know, it's so important. Like you said, 80% buy-in. It's so important to all administration to have those conversations with the other 20%.
Right.
Because if you're a team, you got to have. You need to make corrections.
Yeah, you can have people that poison the well. I mean, that's
failing the school system.
Yeah, yeah.
Failing 1,200 kids.
Yeah.
That's a massive failure, yes. There's no question about it. You have to address it. And if you're not willing to do that, then you probably shouldn't be where you're at. I mean, that's just part of the deal. And when me and Coach Rubel, Ms. Wood, and our teachers looked at our actual test scores just before the report card came out, one group that we saw that had struggles from an achievement standpoint, more so than any other group. So I'm talking, you know, by race, gender, socioeconomic status, whether they're in special education classes, was economically disadvantaged students. These are students on free and reduced lunch. And that probably makes sense, and it's just kind of common sense. Like if a student comes from a background that maybe they do struggle financially, their parents probably aren't educated and maybe don't value education as much as some others. But that was a group that disproportionately for us were in the basic and below basic categories. So we've had a lot of conversations this year. What do we do about that? You know, how do we address those kids? How do we give them opportunities for support at school that maybe they don't get at home? And so places like after school tutoring, flex time, club meetings, anything that can connect that kid to school and get them to come to school. And we think that that will help them also in their attendance, because those kids, our chronic absenteeism, are kids that miss more than the 10%. They're pretty much all economically disadvantaged students. I mean, that's, I would say, one out of the 30 that we had, one was not economically disadvantaged. I'd have to go back and look to be sure. But that's just, those things kind of go hand in hand if you think about it. But we've tried to talk about that with our teachers, and for them to let us know if they notice things in those students that we need to step in and address as well, us and the counselors. You know, if a kid comes to school
and they're dragging, they're sleeping in class, they're not performing adequately, let us know that so we can check into it and we can intervene and say, okay, what's going on at home? What's happening? What can we do to help you so you can be successful in the classroom? Test-taking strategies, once again, this kind of goes in the balance of, like, are we doing too much focus on the testing? But we do want kids to be prepared to be successful. I mean, that's, we talk about athletics or music or anything, you want to practice what you're going to be expected to do. So we do want to have some of that in there where kids know what they're going to see on the test. And as far as the structure of it, how to read the questions, and how to kind of cipher through. A lot of the questions in the state testing now are multiple step questions. It might give you one thing up here, you read, and then you look at a chart. And then you take that information and you read something else. And then you take that and then you answer a question. So a lot of our kids will stop after the second one. You know, they'll get there and they'll say, I'm not doing the rest of this, and then they'll pick an answer. You know, we want to encourage them, give them some strength in that where they feel like they can address the multiple steps that are there. And so those are things that we've incorporated during the Friday flex time. Okay, so we have a lot of students that take proficiency tests every year, meaning that they'll come in April and they'll take a proficiency test in the next year's subject of math or English. So if they pass, get a certain score on the proficiency test, then they skip that class and go on to the grade level that's above that. We wanted to have conversations about, is that really helpful to them? Are they missing something within that year that they skip, quote unquote? You know, because they're ahead of the curve. These are folks that are above the bubble, to use your phrasing there, Mr. Higby. Are we doing them a disservice by having them skip that year? Even though they've earned that because they've taken the proficiency test, are we having some gaps in that that we now have to go back and address because they did miss that year? So I don't know that we've seen enough evidence this year to say that that's true, but that's something we're going to talk about at the end of the year when proficiency test time rolls around again.
I think that's probably an individual basis. You just got to evaluate that each individual.
For sure, yeah. And a lot of these things are. That's a good point that you make there. Reading and writing in every subject, that's something for next year in our professional development committee. We want to address teachers trained to help take some of the pressure off of just the English teachers. The English teachers probably, more so than anybody, have a ton of standards to cover. There was a time where English could be split into English and reading, and there would be actually two, kids would take two classes, one English, one reading. And that's not the case anymore. So we need to have our other subject areas, social studies, science, and math, try to incorporate literacy skills. So reading, looking at text, speaking, listening, all of that into their subject area as best they can to take some of the pressure off of the English teacher being the sole person responsible for teaching the literacy skills. And there are ways to do that, and that's something that we're going to look at next year in our professional development, is how can a science teacher help support the English teacher in those literacy skills. Chronic absenteeism, same kind of thing that Ms. Moore said. We want to increase our communication as best we can with parents, with families. Homebound is an option that if we have a student that has a massive health issue, something that's going to keep them out of school for 10 to 12 days, in previous years we would just count those as absences and it would go towards their 16. The state's given us the opportunity to declare that student homebound, and where we provide work for them, we provide an opportunity for them, for us to actually send a staff member to their house to work with them because they can't come to school during that time and it doesn't count against our attendance. So that is kind of a bonus, thing that's happened here recently that we have the opportunity to do that. So taking advantage of that. Okay, so for us, Coach Rule, Ms. Wood, our staff, we tried to come up with just a number that we felt like we could get to on next year's scoreboard card. And this might seem kind of silly, but I do feel like we need to have something to look at and say, this is where we're trying to get to. This is our goal. And so this year, academic achievement, we're 19.85 out of 35. Our goal for next year is going to be 22 out of 35. Academic growth, which this is completely new, and it's a good thing. This is probably the best part about the new report card is that we're looking at, did we move a kid forward? Did they grow at all? And that's what we want to try to do, and not just an arbitrary line. So 17 out of 30, and we feel like these are things that we can get to. And, I mean, we could have said, well, let's try to get to 28 out of 30, but that just wouldn't have been realistic. We want to kind of chip away at it. You know, it's a new system. Let's chip away at it every year. Try to make some incremental growth every year. Chronic absenteeism, a 6 out of 10. I can already tell you because we run a chronic absenteeism report every week to see where kids are Right now, if the year ended today, we would be a B in chronic absenteeism, but kids miss more school from March to the end of the school year than any time during the year. So those are things that we're working on, we're monitoring, and we're trying to address as we go throughout the year. So, questions?
To his point on setting those goals, one of the aspects of a SMART goal is it attainable? That's one of the aspects of SMART goals. So that's why that's why you do target things. You don't shoot for the moon, because it really needs to be something that's attainable, or else then eventually it just falls apart because you never reach that goal.
Assuming your acronym on SMART is the same as we use, specific,
measurable, relevant, timely. Correct.
So one of the questions, or not, and it's not even so much a question, but that disadvantaged group that you have and you're trying to get them to come in, it's easy to get them to come in and teach. Going back to what I said earlier, what do we do for them to make it entertaining or fun that they want? And with that said, I also look at that group. That is a simply changing of mindset. That's a tough thing. So what is our, to change that mindset of being different than mom and dad? What are we doing?
So for us, and if you look at any research on working with students in poverty, a lady named Ruby Payne is kind of the expert on that. Relationships are huge. One positive relationship with an adult in a school will sometimes be the one difference that gets them to come to school. I mean, they may just come because I don't want to disappoint Coach Swaim. I don't want to disappoint Coach Close or whoever. That can be enough for some kids. For other kids, it's got to be more than that. It's got to be an activity. It's got to be something they're interested in. It might be tech. I mean, tech for me, and sorry to steal any high school here, but I've got kids right now in middle school that if I could put them in tech classes, they would come to school more, they'd have less discipline problems, and they'd probably be happier just in general, because we want to try to establish a well-rounded student where we give them everything as far as a foundation of English, reading, math, science, and all that. But I got one kid that he's been suspended like 45 days, but if he was working in some sort of a shop, he'd be thriving, and he'd come every day to tech, you know?
And that's probably what he's going to do later in life.
Precisely, probably make more money than me, you know? Someday, come up in his big truck to the school. I tell him that all the time, you know? But it's got to be one thing, and sometimes it's hard to find that one thing. But for us in the classroom, it's making it as engaging as possible. If that's something we can control, then let's try to do that. If you're in your classroom and for math, how do I make it as engaging as possible for the students? And if they don't like math, can I have a relationship with them where they'll come and try just for me? You know, I had many students when I was in the classroom where I could just say, Chris, just do this for me. And they would do it because they knew I loved them. You know, whereas for other people, they might give them the bird or something. You know, sometimes it's just that.
So do you, to achieve that, do you have like a core group that you bounce things off of? Say, hey, we've got Susie, and I see this. I think that we can reach her this way. Is there some sort of a mechanism you use there?
So our Wednesday meetings, we do that as part of our Wednesday meetings. And also I have a site leadership team, which is kind of our teacher leaders, you know, are those that we view as, these are our master teachers, these are people we want mentoring our younger people, Coach Rubel, Miss Wood, myself, and then other community people that we know work with them. So we got a seventh grader who school's not necessarily high on his priority list, but he loves his outside of school baseball team. So his baseball coach is somebody that I talk to. And we try to, like, you know, if he's had a bad, I don't know, he threw like a perfect game over the weekend or something. So his coach calls me and says, hey, you know, Connor threw a perfect game in baseball. He texts me. So then the next day on Monday, I could say, man, good job on the perfect game. And he's like, how'd you even know that? You know? And that's one thing that he could have at school, one recognition of I did something successful, and maybe that'll translate to maybe I'll go try in my math class now because somebody
I'm
here
glad recognizes. You're having that communication. That communication is key to any success. It doesn't matter what it is.
And I'll mention two other things too: increased clubs and organizations for kids to be a part of. Mm-hmm.
Agreed.
Peak interest. Kids got to be connected. And so we've done that a lot there. And also these citizenship awards that you just started, do good awards, if you whatever you call them, the Dewey Way. Doing no school way, if you want to expand on that.
The school system in the last 50 years has evolved into they've taken away shop classes, they've taken away welding classes, they've eliminated people's interest.
Right.
And that's really a major injustice.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And we're having to provide a lot more for kids emotionally, you know, they're, your kids have major mental health issues that, I mean, we got kids with anxiety. I didn't even know how to spell anxiety when I was a kid. I had no idea what that was. I wouldn't worry about anything except, does the girl next to me like me? You know, that's it.
Thank but these, this is a part of the problem, though, right here.
It doesn't help, yeah. It doesn't help, so. One thing, sorry, was there a question there? I'm sorry.
Last thing I'll say, and I'll leave you alone, is I love your goals and benchmarks. I mean, that's the system I operate off of.
Right.
Because, I mean, that's, in any project, we have to have a goal and a benchmark. Mm-hmm. It has to be smart and time-bound. Because if it's not, then we're costing the company money and we're overhead.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's a good talking point for us with our staff. Yep. You know, it's not just, well, let's try to get to a B this year. It's, okay, we're going to try to grow 1.5 points. You know, and how do we actually do that in reality?
Yep. So, thank you, sir.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Any other questions? Okay.
All right. Okay, moving to high school. We're going to have to maybe shift our mindset just a little bit whenever we're talking about academic achievement, because we no longer have the growth component in high school. All right, so we are back to sit. This current report card is off of one test. I'll give it on one day, albeit, ironically enough, the second day of the walkout here that we're coming up on, tomorrow being the year that we are 1 year away, but or removed. But so with that, okay, with the ACT, you have the English the language arts part of the test, you have the reading part of the test, and then also we also take the fifth section that is not a requirement by most colleges, but that's the writing component that the state requires us to take, and that all encompasses the ELA. Okay, and so with each of those, there's a subscore that's based off of the 0 through 36 ACT scale score that you're able to obtain. And so each of those, each student gets a cut score on each of those. The writing is the exception. It's on a 12-point scale instead of 36. So we, this school year, got from ACT the scores of each kid just like we do whenever they take it individually. And so we did not know until about this same October-November time frame of how those scores of our students, how that was going to then be factored by the State Department into this OPI score, this overall performance index score. And so essentially what it all came down to is the cut score, the mark for a student to be proficient, was essentially a 21. On the English and then the language arts part of the reading part of the ACT, and that's still not, we still got to go a little deeper in the weeds to get because they still had to figure it all by thirds at that point, because they figured all three components of it to get that overall score. Okay, so but roughly our goal for our kids on the English and the math as well, because the English and the math scores in the academic achievement part are based off of their sub scores in the ACT. So 21 is our benchmark there that we're trying to get every student to obtain. So with that, we have the last 2 years been able to give our sophomores the pre-ACT, which it's essentially just a shortened version of the ACT, and then we get the results back from those. And so that's our big testing platform that we are in the process of figuring out how to best utilize. And so before I go into that too much, also the science part, we don't have this year, but we will this next year. That's going to be another 15 points. And then the U.S. history, again, we don't know where that's going to be. At one point it was talked about it was going to be bonus points. Now there's no talk of it at all because there's still some work in the legislature that it may be removed. So it's still up in the air. We are, however, this month taking a U.S. history test that is going to be a field test. It's not going to mean anything, but they're supposed to be testing questions that potentially could be used next year, far as that. Okay?
When you get that, would you share that with him so we can get it? I'm curious about that.
The
history portion of it, the test that you're going to do. I'm really curious about that.
Yeah, we'll see. So with that, we've been kind of tweaking and figuring out how can we use these pre-ACT results that our students are taking as a sophomore to best prepare them and understand where their needs are and where their inadequacies are with being prepared for the ACT. So we've got to kind of understand of what standards and concepts students are having difficulty with. and then being able to take that into our current curriculum that's being taught and understand how to analyze that and take the Oklahoma academic standards that the ACT claims that it's 100% aligned to. I'm not real sure that it is, but that it's really closely aligned. I will say that. And so we have to take these Oklahoma academic standards that teachers are used to teaching and for the last couple of years have been able to teach freely, and then take the areas that our kids are struggling in the ACT and say, okay, this standard matches this struggle area, so we've got to hammer this into as one of our essential skills. Okay? And so those results don't come, currently they don't come in a great way just to give to teachers and just sit down and just start dissecting with it. So we've kind of been meeting with the math and English teachers individually and then giving them time within a certain time frame of the school year to have those results in front of them and be able to, because there's actually review questions and things that they can go through with the kids. And so they have been throughout the school year, I said school year, since we've got those results going through and going through those with the kids. Again, I kind of touched on this already as far as identifying the Oklahoma academic standards that aren't being mastered that are going to best prepare our students for the ACT itself. Caveat here that I have to mention is our academic achievement rating on the report card is based off of all of our juniors taking the test. We, on average, probably have 35% of our students that graduate go to college. So we've got to figure out a way to get that 70 to 65% of kids that have no interest in going to college. We've got to figure out a way to get them to a level that they can meet the minimum interest requirement for the majority of universities. That's a tough feat in itself right there, is getting kids that have no interest in going to college to get to a 21. So,
because remember, this is a college entrance exam. Mm-hmm. And that's a little bit of our struggle here.
Dude, at one point in time, didn't we have two different projects? One was a college readiness, and the other was
non-college.
Still have it.
We still have it. We still have college prep, and
but they still have to take this and score to that proficiency.
Yeah, and
it's unfortunate.
Yes, and the ACT itself is much better than the 470 OIs that we were going into. But ACT has a work keys portion of their test that students, we used to have to take quite a bit to help pass those 4 or 7. It was an alternate test that was accepted. I really hope that the State Department will find a way to get the federal government to allow us for those core curriculum kids that know out the gate that, yeah, I'm going to Tri-County Tech and I'm going to the work field, that we can find a way to utilize that test, because it's...
There's no incentive for them to do well.
Exactly. Right. But the work keys tests are more aligned to those types of students. So that's why that would be beneficial if we could utilize it, because it really does provide them an avenue then, yes, to take a test that has some now relevancy to their situation, as opposed to, I'm not going to college. I know I'm not going to college. I'm taking this college entrance exam. How do you match that with their entrance? Yeah. And say, well, this is why you need to take this and do well on it.
I know that I can't remember which one. Is he in North or South Carolina? I was reading on it, and they have this same system. And if they're not going to college, they really cater to those kids. And it goes back to what David said, whether it be nursing, whether it be cosmetology, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And they really push those kids, and the success rate is huge.
Absolutely.
Makes sense.
Yeah, no doubt. And the last thing is, you know, we've got 27 teachers in the high school. We've got one junior English teacher, one sophomore English teacher, one freshman English teacher. So that's three teachers that are preparing, you know, students for the English part. Same with math, you know, three math teachers. It doesn't just fall on those three teachers. So we have to, as an entire staff, buy into doing our part. And our part may be, you know, if it's a modern history class, our part may be just figuring out how to make our test in the same format where they're timed, where they have to reference test or a specific piece of text. The majority of the ACT is students being able to read a passage, dissect that passage, and being able to reference a question into the text. So That can be done in all of our classrooms. And so that's something that we've got to get our teachers on board and doing. And we're getting there. That process has just started, but we're getting there, and they understand the need. It's just now getting it to be put into practice on a regular basis. And I think that's where we're at. I think we've cleared the hurdle of teachers being skeptical that, is this really what things are going to be like now? Because we've gone through 3 years of it being changed every year.
Yeah.
And so there's that natural skepticism that I don't want to devote too much time into this current thing just in case it changes again next year. I think we've passed that hurdle. So now everyone sees that this is where we're going. And so now I really think going into next school year, we like I said, we crossed that big hurdle that we can go ahead and really start getting all teachers to do their part, especially in high school because it is so diverse. Okay, moving on to our next section, the post-secondary opportunities. You know, really, all in all, I was kind of surprised with our score here. It was a little higher than I had anticipated. I didn't anticipate that so many of the programs that our students were participating in Tri-County Tech counting towards meeting that industry certification requirement. The way that had been explained to me and everything, I was anticipating it to be our welding students, our nursing students, our cosmetology students, those students that were leaving Tech with an actual certificate to go be able to perform that job. But our students that are in networking, I can't think of another one on top of my head, but essentially every program that they ran out there counted towards this industry certification. So yeah, that's really good. And again, it goes back to the need for us to be able to identify kids at a younger age that are coming into us as freshmen. These are our Tri-County Tech kids, so we can, freshman, sophomore, put them in the best position to be accepted into Tri-County Tech. And then create and implement the internship program. I've spoken to you guys before about this internship program. I'm late getting it going. It's just been a little bigger of an animal than I had anticipated. I'm speaking with a counselor and administrator just last week, and they said, start small. I said, this thing is so big. You guys got to start small. So we will get it going next school year. So this adds right now going into next school year, we've got 26 of our 86 senior going soon to be seniors that are interested and have signed up to be in the internship program. Of that 26, I haven't been able to really go in and see what other post-secondary opportunities programs they already are involved in, but again, like I said, we get a point for multiple opportunities that post-secondary opportunities that each student is involved in. So hopefully this will give us an avenue to potentially get 26 more points added to that total. And at the end of the day, we're talking about raising points for a report card, but my main goal has always been to prepare students for year five, that first year after high school. There's no better program than to prepare students for that fifth year of high school. Or after high school, and so this is big, and this is something that is going to be really good for our kids moving forward.
This is probably one of the most beneficial aspects in change at the high school level for all schools in Oklahoma is the increased focus on preparing kids for some sort of post high school work and or at least a thought process for the things that I might want to do, the things I'm interested in. It is an area that high schools for a long time have. We just kind of missed the boat, but there's been other things that have been higher priorities. I'm just glad at this point for the high school that this is now an essential aspect, and it's being seen that way from the state level, and they're providing us guidance and some opportunities to do so. I will say, though, there's the ICAP, and that is now, if that's supposed to be a plan for every student on what they're going to do post-high school, that is a bit of an unfunded mandate. And so they have laid something at our feet, though, that's not going to be funded. So I have to say that as a part of that. I think it's a great deal, but there's a whole lot to that. And honestly, if it came with some funding, we could probably have some help in developing those and supporting our kids further on that. But, again, that is kind of an unfunded mandate. But at the same time, though, it's a quality initiative. The state is helping us. Put together at all high schools.
Yeah, so with the ICAP, our incoming freshmen are the first, that will be the first class that when they graduate, they must have completed all I think it was 13, but don't quote me on that, but all of the requirements that are part of that individual career academic plan. So essentially, the best way I can kind of describe it is they're going to kind of graduate with two transcripts. They're going to have their academic transcript, and then they're going to have their ICAP document that we have to show that they have completed. So
with that said, is it going to take away the opportunities for them on correspondence and APs, or is there not going to be enough that's going to matter a whole lot?
I don't foresee it taking away from anything. What it has done, we also at the high school have the flex time that the middle school does, and those naysayers on my staff that aren't real happy about flex, I was able to tell them here March, this is here to stay because that we already had this in place.
Yeah.
This is when we're going to do our ICAP stuff and not take away from the irregular instructional time. There are a lot of schools that don't have that in place now, and so they're trying to figure out how they're going to put it into their master schedule. We already have that built in currently, so that's not going to take away from anything there.
So you've had the moving target over the last several years, and I know that it's hard to put a defining point to this, but with that said, do you feel that you are closing in on that ACT? Do you feel that 3 years ago you're further away than you are today? Or is this just now the real eye-opener because now it becomes of more importance because of the new system?
That's a good question. I'm not sure I can quantify that just yet since last year was the first time that all of our students have taken the ACT. You know, in the past, whenever I presented the college remediation report and everything, those are just our select kids that chose to take the test on their own. Now we've got everyone.
You've got a baseline.
And so, yeah. And we're also talking, and with the ACT being a junior level test only, there may be a large difference between the class of 2019, 2020, 2020. You know, it could go back and forth. We could have a lot of, you know, ups and downs. So it's and the instruction be the same. You know, this test being taken tomorrow, we may have some great results, and so our academic achievement may go up tremendously on our next report card.
And so the information that's on the ACT, what from class what down is that actually covering? Is that like sophomore year back? Is that 8th, 9th grade? I mean, what all do they consider the ACT to be covering?
That's a good question. I believe it's up to their junior year. I mean, it basically comes as high school. I mean, all of the, you know, it doesn't go, I mean, as far as math.
About 9th through 11th?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That? Yeah, as far as math goes, ACT, you need a good understanding of algebra too. You know, kind of the where I go with that is ACT says that you don't need to be able to use a scientific calculator to complete all of the math questions. I'm not sure that's the case, you know. And so our students, if they haven't completed algebra 2, you know, they don't get the training on how to use a scientific calculator. So again, but those are those core kids that we're talking about that are going into the workforce. They're not taking algebra 2.
Yeah.
It pretty much is the first 3 years of high school.
So I know we're taking the ACT to quantify for this test. They are not using our outside ACT has no factor or bearing on this. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. Yeah, good question. Yeah, in fact, because we still get the same label that we put on the student's permanent record from the ACT, but it says state test. So ACT, they have their national testing dates that they set for the entire year. They've given the state of Oklahoma a separate national test date that they are accepting and students can use for colleges as well. So I mean, it gives us an extra test date there for our students.
So you can utilize your high school this test if
yes.
you wanted to.
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting.
Absolutely. Yeah.
For sure. You're buying the teacher number.
So?
75.
75%. Okay, and let me clarify your question. Are you talking about preparing students for the ACT buy-in?
No, I'm talking about team effort, everything. I'm talking about everything. If you've got an issue, have meetings.
Then, okay, Matt, we're right there with the middle school. We're 80%. maybe 83. I feel really good about our staff. And I feel really good about my staff in the sense of preparing the whole child. We are not 100% test. We're going to prepare for the test. Especially in science, man, we're taking more field trips than we've probably ever taken to get kids exposed to seeing what's out there and the occupations that are out there. We're bringing you know, employees in from different workforces, and then from those things, our teachers are getting contacts because teachers are in the room when those career people are speaking to our kids, and so that sparks conversation. You know, our Cal kids are getting ready to take a trip to
research center.
Yeah, this research center, and I couldn't remember which one, because we had an engineer come speak to them. So
do you feel that those STEM courses are drawing more kids? Do you think that they're getting more relation? Do you think that those STEM courses are helping?
It's helping those higher, that we refer to those kids above the bubble. Yes, okay. It's definitely helping those kids, absolutely. Okay, mm-hmm. Okay, moving on. Okay, the chronic absenteeism. Obviously, on our current report card, chronic absenteeism was awful. We definitely had some special circumstances that contributed to that last year with some of the trauma that our students went through with health issues. And with that, it's kind of sparked some conversations with us at the high school here recently is creating a trauma-informed school, and that simply is training our teachers to understand and recognize these students that, as Mr. Massey referred to, that are coming to us with all these issues in their life and are coming to us with deficiencies that they don't know how to deal with. And because of that, school is the last thing that's on their mind. And so we feel like that if we can recognize these kids by teachers building relationships with these kids, not only are we going to promote them being a school, but it's also academically going to improve their achievement. You know, we are, as far as communication, we already do these things as far as communication in all these different areas. The biggest thing we need to do, continue to do better, is educating our students and our families on the negative effects as far as chronic absenteeism. I mean, missing two days a month can negatively affect a student's academic achievement throughout the entire school year. And that student's going to be chronically absent. They just miss 2 days a month throughout the entire school year. That's not much when it comes down to it. Mr. Stowe does a great job of communicating with our kids and our families. Every day he sends out a Dewey Daily, a remind that at 7:20, an hour before school starts, probably 80%, 70% of our kids are getting that remind.
Yeah.
Just a little quote of the day, you know, just to get them up and just kind of, just a little, hopefully a positive, maybe the only positive thing that's said to them all day.
That's going directly to our kids, mm-hmm. directly to each one.
And so, like I said, and so he and Mr. Massey have created a new appeals form process, tried to put more accountability on student and parents within that process, where they have to formally explain some things and go through the process with him, continue to improve that. We also, these kids that we have identified as at risk for being chronically absent, next August when they come pick up their schedule, their Chromebooks, he and I are going to have meetings with him, them, and their parents to have a face-to-face conversation about simply how attendance is hurting their academic achievement. And then continue to do a better job of more accurately and tracking the data and looking at interventions. You know, every 10 days, tracking those students that are at risk and then having those conversations with them face-to-face. So I believe that's it.
I applaud you on having a conversation with the parents because, I mean, end of the day, communication, and Vince and I talked about this last week. That's it. That's huge. If you don't have that communication, then there's always an out. But if you have it, it's a one-sided out at that time.
And there's a lot of times, you know, it's easy to get after a kid and that be the end of it. But whenever you get down and look at it a little closer and have that conversation with the kid, you realize that, man, this kid wants to be here, but there's outside circumstances that they can't prevent from keeping them from being here. So then now you know where to take that conversation.
You know, it's just like we're just talking about it. We're going to see more of the chronic absenteeism in this last half of the year. And parents, I don't know why, I was always, if the school's open, you're there. Mm-hmm. Now they're ready to take vacations, everything else. It's not until school's over, folks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a struggle, no doubt. It's a challenge.
Thank you, guys. Mm-hmm. Everybody.
Appreciate it. Yeah. Appreciate your questions.
The only thing I will reiterate and sum up on all that is that just keep in mind everything you saw is really kind of two report cards away in terms of, because we're already 3 weeks in, testing has started this month, which is going to affect next year's report card. You have heard, though, that there were some things that were done for this year in anticipation of some of the things we